everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is June 10, 2017, and we have a lot going on today. Don't we always? It's always an action-packed show. You know, it's pretty humbling. People, I've had one person actually almost come to a screech and halt, roll down the window and say, hey, great show. And I'm saying, I don't even know you. Who are you? But people are listening all around. We're enjoying the feedback. And the number here, if you want to be part of the show, is 254-697-6633. And you can give us a call here at the station to become part of the program. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a break in the show. But, you know, I always tell you, I start my day with my cup of morning Joe. And I always go to CEFCO and get my fresh Joe coffee. You need to go there. It's fantastic because it tastes the same every time. And it's not in one of those styrofoam cups that start bleeding the chemicals into your coffee and making it taste terrible. It's a wax cup. It tastes great. And all the ladies there, they're very nice at Hilltop CEFCO here in Cameron. Go get your CEFCO fresh brewed 32-ounce sweet tea today. It's only $1.40 plus tax. You'll enjoy it. It's going to be a hot day today. You'll like to have some fresh tea to keep you cool. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a show highlight breakdown of what's coming up here, and then we're going to take a quick break. We've got today's stories of self-defense. They come from the Concealed Handgun Magazine. And I'm going to read them to you and give you my excellent commentary on each one of those. There's lots to learn from these. And we've gone through a whole bunch of stories, and some are scary, some are funny, but we can learn a lot from these stories. So pay attention to that, and that'll be coming up soon. In my License to Carry segment, we'll be talking about the traffic stop. This segment will bleed into our attorney lawyer segment with attorney Rick Dodd. And we will also have Officer Randy Dixon joining in for our overall view of the do's and don'ts, the cans and cannots of a traffic stop. This is going to be a great segment. Everybody gets stopped once in their life, if not twice or multiple times. It's important to know how to handle yourself on a traffic stop. As always, there's lots going on at Aaron's, and in my topic of interest section, I'll go over all the events that have happened and are going to happen and that are coming up. So stay tuned and get your calendars out. At 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. this morning, less than an hour away, as always, the voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon, the connoisseur of common sense, the pontificator of practicality, and all-around good guy, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the North American Arms Pug Mini Revolver. This is an unbelievably underrated firearm, and you can get it at ANC Firearms. I want to give you, or I want to tell you all about it in the product spotlight segment. If you don't have one, especially you ladies, you need to get one. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've got no interview today, so I'm going to fill it up with some of the topics that I don't have time for usually, such as my opinion piece, I don't know, a couple of WTF moments, and maybe even a gun training demo. So what we're going to do now, we got a new operator on the board. Joel, how you doing? Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Okay. What we're going to do, Joel, we're going to take a break, and my first opening segment, we have a new sponsor. And it's Twin Gun Bail Bonds, Twin Pistol Bail Bonds. And we're going to start the segment off with that sponsorship. So let's hit it, Joel. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Bail Bonds, 497-6035. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, June 10, 2017. This segment being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to be doing our true stories of self-defense. This one, this time, this week, I've got it out of the Conceal a Handgun magazine, and I'm only going to read to you four of these stories. And we're going to start off. This one comes from the May-June issue. Texas jogger defeats armed robber. An Arlington man was jogging when a truck pulled up beside him. A young man descended to the street and approached the jogger, displaying a gun and demanding money. Rather than comply, the jogger drew his legally carried pistol and fired on the robber, striking him several times in the groin area and putting him to flight. That's kind of like an oxymoron, isn't it? Groin, run, no, I don't get it. Police received a tip a short time later that led to the apprehension of the wounded robber, who quickly confessed. Police are investigating the incident as a robbery attempt with self-defense by the jogger, who is not expected to face charges. And, of course, my excellent commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, two things I want to comment about this story. And number one is, the way it's written makes the defender look like he immediately identified the threat and acted accordingly, and for that, I applaud him. Number two, however, the shot placement is terrible, which tells me some things about the shooter and the gun. First thing, the shooter is not well trained with the gun he was carrying. He anticipated the shot, which caused the shots to go low. But two, the gun may have had a long trigger pull, which is never really good. So, you know, you've got to learn your different types of triggers, and that's what we teach in the class. If you've got a gun and you're not familiar with how to use it, you come to do some training so you become proficient with the firearm. And also, if you understand the basic actions of guns, you know what triggers will work best for you that won't cause the gun to be pulled down to the groin area when you're taking the shot. You want to shoot center mass, okay? All right, let's go to story number two. Florida man stops home invasion. Two armed men broke into a Pine Hills residence and held the older female homeowner at gunpoint. Seeing what was happening, the homeowner's son hurriedly retrieved a pistol and fired on the burglars, killing one and seriously wounding the other, thus ending the incident. My commentary. This Florida man saw, calculated, and responded in true form to save his mother. I said last week, don't mess with a mother's child. This week, don't mess with a boy's mama. Story number three. California man defends against granddaughter's boyfriend. A Reading man's granddaughter visited his home with her boyfriend for a weekend. As the visit progressed, the boyfriend became hostile and abusive. After seeing several incidents of abuse towards his granddaughter, the older man armed himself as a precaution, then told the boyfriend he was not welcome and must leave. When the younger man attacked the grandfather rather than comply with the request to leave, the older man shot him in self-defense. Though wounded, the younger man attacked again and was shot a second time, which ended the attack. The grandfather is not expected to face charges. Again, my excellent commentary. Girls have a tendency to like the bad boys. Sometimes the bad boys are really bad and must be dispatched. Don't mess with daddy's little girl. Or daddy, for that matter. Story number four. Michigan man stops party store robbery. Two men attempted to rob a Roseville party store one evening. Fortunately, a friend of the owner who was armed was visiting the store at the time. Seeing one robber pointing his gun at the employees, the friend drew his own pistol and fired on the robbers, missing them, but putting them to flight. Can anybody who's been listening to this program guess what I'm about to say? If you think you can figure it out, give me a call real quick, 254-697-6633, but I want to tell you right now. Remember, everyone, every bullet has a lawyer attached to it. Isn't that right, Rick? I got Rick Dodd, attorney Rick Dodd, sitting next to me.
I'm not sure what to say about that. I don't know. I think the fellow on the other end of the bullet really wouldn't need a lawyer.
Yeah, well, I don't know. If he's still alive, you know how those stories go. They always say certain people tell no lies. But if you're going to shoot, you better be sure of your target and your backstop. Stray rounds can get you in lots of legal problems, so you need to practice. Okay, that comes from the Conceal a Handgun magazine. Those are true stories of self-defense. And what we're going to do now, Joel, we're going to shake it up a little bit. Let's do, we're going to close out this segment with Twin Pistols. And when we come back, we're going to combine our license to carry segment with our attorney segment. And I also have sitting with me here is Officer Randy Dixon. And I've got attorney, super attorney Rick Dodd. And we're going to be going over the traffic stops. So we're going to have all angles. You're going to have my angle, how an officer wants to see it, and how an attorney might take it if it ever gets to that point. So we'll be back on the other side of this break. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, it's June 10th, 2017, and we're here live for the next hour and 40 minutes, God willing. And we've got a really great show going already. Off, we're bleeding the two together, the license to carry segment. Conceal a handgun, license to carry, practically the same thing, just different letters, okay? And then we're going to bleed in our attorney segment. And I have on my left, Super Attorney Rick Dodd. And on my right, we have Officer Randy Dixon. And this is going to be a fantastic conversation. We'll be talking about traffic stops. So what I'm going to do, many questions are asked of me as to what to do on a traffic stop, especially, you know, if you're carrying a license to carry. So I'm going to give you your host's perspective as to what to do from my own common sense and the advice given to me by law enforcement throughout the years. But first, I'm going to read the bullet lines from the training manual and then overlay that with my experience. And after that, I'll have attorney Rick Dodd and Officer Randy Dixon go over the legal aspects of the traffic stop so that if, God forbid, you are stopped, you'll know how to handle yourself properly. Now, it's very easy for a traffic stop to go bad, especially if you or the officer are having a bad day. Okay, so let me read these bullet points and then we'll get into this here. Traffic stops. First of all, you want to follow instructions. Pull over to as safe a place as you can. Keep your hands on top of the steering wheel. Turn on the dome light if necessary. Don't make quick movements or look like you're hiding stuff, particularly as the officer approaches. Be prepared to properly display your driver's license and license to carry if it's applicable. Okay, so that, and of course, we expand upon that, and that's what I'm going to do right now. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, what your host does if, in the rare occasion, they catch me and pull me over. Okay. Now, I am very favorable to law enforcement, and I understand that at any moment something can go wrong, and an officer coming up to a traffic stop never knows when it's going to go down. So trying to put the officer at ease as much as possible on a traffic stop, I'm going to do the basic courtesies that I would expect done to me if I was a law enforcement officer. So if I get pulled over, I'm not going to drive for miles and miles and miles before I pull over, just because. I'll do that if there's no place to safely pull over. But if there's a place pretty quick, I'm going to pull over. I'm going to signal, pull over. Once I pull over, the first thing I'm doing is I'm shutting the car off after I've rolled down the windows. And if it's dark out, turn the dome light on. So I'm pulling over. The windows are down in case they're tinted or you can't see, they're fogged, whatever. Okay. I want the officer as he approaches the car to be able to see in all the time what's going on. The dome on if it's dark. They end my keys and I put them on the dashboard. And then I rest my wrists on top of the steering wheel with my fingers extended, and I sit in a manner that is relaxed because I'm not worried about it. I got no contraband, so I'm not worried about it. Okay, so the officer starts coming up, and this is what I do. As the officer approaches, I smile and say, "Officer, how are you? I want you to know that I am a license to carry holder. And I do have the weapon on me at this time. and it is located in such and such a place. And my wallet is in my left rear pocket. What would you like me to do, sir? And they look at me and they go, huh? It's like I caught him off guard. They go, okay, you're okay. Where's the gun? I said, it's right there. I said, it's fine. Just don't go to it. Let me see your license and registration, whatever. So I prepped him, let him know, because I'm going to tell you something. If you have a license to carry and you're pulled over, the officer reads your plates. They know who owns the car, but they don't know who's driving the car. Once they get your driver's license and they call it in, they're going to know whether or not you got a license to carry or not. And let me be very clear on something when it comes to the license to carry. The law specifically states if you're a license to carry holder and you do not have the weapon on you at the time, you're not required to tell the officer that you're a license to carry holder. That's the law. Now, for the common sense reality of it is, I don't care if you got the gun on you or not. Tell the officer you're a license to carry holder and that you either have the gun on you or you don't have the gun on you, because he's going to find out or she's going to find out. And if they find out and you didn't tell them, they're going to be a little PO'd. Okay, because it's like, why didn't you tell me? And then you're going to go, well, because the law specifically states, if I don't have the gun on me, and then you're going to get a traffic ticket plus one, okay? So that's the way I would do it if I was stopped by a police officer. Now, what I'd like to do next is to get Officer Randy Dixon on to say what him as a law enforcement officer would like in return, if he concurs with what I just said, or if there's something I forgot. So, Randy, why don't you tell us your aspect of it if you're pulling somebody over, and then we're going to get Super Attorney Rick Dodd's legal aspects of it as well.
Basically, what you said to do is exactly what we would like people to do. Now, I'll tell you right now, most of the people don't take the time to turn the vehicle off. They don't put their keys up, and they don't keep their hands where they can be seen. You know, you have to understand that when a police officer stops a car, 99.9% of the time, he has no clue who's driving that car. The car may be registered to someone out of Temple, but it may be driven by someone out of Houston. When an officer walks up to the car, number one, his safety factor is going to kick in. He is going to consider himself, every stop he considers is a dangerous stop. That doesn't mean every stop is going to be a dangerous stop. But it only takes a flash of a second for someone's life to go terribly, terribly wrong. So hypothetically, what we like to do and what I like to see is, if you're driving down the highway, and let's say that you're stopped by the police officer, exactly what you said to do is what we would hope you do. Pull over safely to the right, never to the left. Give the officer a chance to get up to your car. Listen to what he has to say. You know, in the 43 years I've been doing this business, and, 17 of it as a chief, I told my officers, I said, you know, use your 7-step approach. If you follow a 7-step approach every time as a habit, then you're not going to fall into any kind of situation that's going to basically turn bad unless there is a criminal involved. And 99.9% of the people that you stop are going to be good, honest citizens who just made a mistake. And sometimes they don't even know what the mistake they made was. You know, I tell young officers, I said, if you're going to stop somebody, you're going to work traffic, and you pull somebody over, number one, nobody wants to be pulled over by the police. I'm telling you right now. I was stopped in three different times in one day going to Houston here about 2 months ago. So I understand nobody wants to get stopped. But we do get stopped, and people are going to get stopped. But if an officer walks up to you, the first thing hopefully he's going to identify himself to who he is. And then he's going to ask for your DL. Now, here's where a lot of people get in trouble. They want to start arguing right off the bat before they ever hand the DL to the officer. Folks, that's the wrong thing to do. Hand the DL, the insurance, to the officer, because he's going to demand that first. That's his safety factor. If something goes wrong, he's got the DL in his hand. He's got the identification in his hand. And then once that officer gets that driver's license and that insurance card, and by the way, what I'd also recommend is, you know, if you have a license to carry, you hand that to him at the driver's license. Take it out, give it to him. That way it takes the guesswork out right there. And he may ask you, he said, do you have a weapon in the vehicle? If he does, just be honest, tell him. And even if you're not a license to carry, and he asks you if you have a weapon, don't lie to him. Just tell him, yes, I'm in the car. You know, there's certain circumstances where it's totally legal to do that. And then once he gets that driver's license, he makes contact with you, he or she knows who they're talking to, they're going to hopefully explain to you why you were stopped. Now, you may not agree with them. You may think you did something, but the side of the street is not where to hold court. That's not where the jury is. The jury is when you get people like Mr. Dodd or someone like that to go to court with you, and you let a judge decide. An officer is just doing his job by enforcing the law. He is not the judge and jury. But you got to go along with what he has to say, because the side of the street is not the place to argue, folks. And when you argue, it just makes situations go bad. Now, the next thing the officer is going to do, he's going to tell you, folks, I'm going to give you a warning. I'm going to give you a citation. He does what he's going to do. He explains it to you. And some people say, well, I'm not going to sign the citation. Well, folks, you know, there's a couple of ways to look at that. When you sign a citation, you're not saying you're guilty. All you're doing is saying you'll promise to take care of it one way or the other, either by contacting the court itself, a lawyer to set up a court for you. But you, in most cases, you are required to sign that citation, or you could be arrested for that. We would hope not. We would hope we would never regress to that. Then once that is done, the officer is going to leave, and he's not going to leave till you leave if he's a good officer. And he's not going to tell you, well, have a nice day, because once you've already been stopped, your day's been ruined anyway. But, folks, the thing is, an officer doesn't know what he's walking up to. Let me give you a quick example of that. In the late 80s, I was working traffic division for Temple, and I stopped a vehicle speeding down one of the streets in Temple. A fairly heavy speed. A lady and a man were in it. Wrote the citation for speeding. Didn't think anything about it. Went home from end of my shift at 11 o'clock that night. 3 o'clock that morning, those same two individuals were caught burglarizing a auto shop in Temple, or a dealership in Temple. And they had an Israeli Arms 44 caliber rifle, a pistol with them. That was in the car when I stopped that car. They could have shot me. They could have done anything they wanted to. But I didn't give them the chance to, because I conducted my business. I got back and left. Folks, just do what the officer says on the street. You may not like it. You may not agree with it. But once again, that's not the place you argue.
Those are all fantastic points. So stand by, Randy. We're going to have Super Attorney Rick Dye here. Rick, how's it going? Good to have you back on the show.
Oh, it's good to be here.
It's like a tag team left-right 1-2 punch with you and Ross. You just come in here. If one's not doing it, the other's doing it. But no matter what happens, we're giving great information out here.
Ross is a good guy. I always enjoy listening to him.
Well, Rick, what we've got here is my interpretation. I read what it says in the book, how I do things. Randy here told him everybody how he would like it done on the street. But I've got some questions, and I know you're going to have a whole bunch of information here, but I'm talking probable cause. What is it? Is there any violation of rights? What are they? How do you respond if rights are violated? Dark roads, women in cars, what to do, guns, where they're located, what to do, so on and so forth. So with this big gamut of information, with your expertise, why don't you lay on the line, tell everybody out there listening your aspects, legal aspects of how this all works.
Well, probable cause for a stop. I mean, basically, you have a situation where there's a definition. It's such a wide open definition that the courts have said there's really no definition. But if there are facts sufficient to warrant a man a reasonable caution in the belief that an offense is being committed, that is probable cause.
That's wide open.
That's wide open. That's right.
That's why I like the law, how black and white it is. I can read it and make total sense of it. Not.
But basically, you know, I believe I agree with everything you and Officer Dixon has said here. Absolutely. The problem comes in is when...
That's why I like the law, how black and white it is. I can read it and make total sense of it. Not.
But basically, you know, I believe I agree with everything you and Officer Dixon has said here. Absolutely. The problem comes in is when maybe the officer is not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And that happens. That happens quite a bit. Violation of rights. A violation of rights, of course, the rights are given to us by our Constitution. And the Fourth Amendment says that we should be free from unreasonable search and seizures. We should be free from being unreasonably detained. So there's a lot of case law out there about what is unreasonable as far as being detained. For instance, when you have an unreasonable search and seizure, there may be probable cause to do a search, but those searches may be limited to certain areas of the vehicle where perhaps what your probable cause might be found. For instance, if you were looking for an illegal alien from Russia, you wouldn't have the right to go into the glove pocket. Maybe the trunk. But, you know, a lot of the searches are being done for drugs, and, of course, they can be hidden anywhere. So that would allow the officer to search in many places.
I want to make one comment, though. Officer Dixon and I were talking about this before we went on air. In no way, shape, or form do I promote that you should be saying, hey, you're violating my rights. No, absolutely not. If you're pulled over, you obey what the law officer says. If you got a problem or an issue, you take it up after that. Do not elevate the situation if you think rights are violated, because it goes bad. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, and a great example of it going bad is the Sander Bland case. And we've heard a lot about the Sander Bland case, and it went bad on both ends, in my opinion. You have a situation where you have a DPS officer who's supposed to be trained to de-escalate problems. So if you get into a situation and the officer is not de-escalating the problem, you better start doing it.
That's right.
Because things are going to go bad. Unfortunately for Ms. Bland, she didn't de-escalate the problem, nor did the officer. What happened on that is that was in July the 10th of 2015. And, you know, backing up a little bit, the officer, when he gets out of a car, he is in harm's way. And the fact is, in a 10-year period before 2000, 93 law officers were killed in the United States during traffic stops or pursuits.
That's a lot. I mean,
that's right. In 1998 alone, there were 9 killed, but what astounded me were there were 6,248 assaulted. Of course, I don't know how bad the assaults were, but I'm sure some of those were gunshot wounds and hit on the head and things of that nature. So they have to be on the defense. But, again, they're supposed to be trained. So when the officer approaches Miss Bland, she's smoking a cigarette. He tells her to put the cigarette out. Okay, instead of complying with that simple request, she says, well, I know my rights. I don't have to put the cigarette out. I'm in my car. Well, the officer should have backed off and said, okay, because she was right. She didn't have to put the cigarette out. But instead, it upset him because it was a challenge to his authority. So then he says, well, step out of the car. And Miss Bland says, well, I don't have to get out of my car. You don't have the right to tell me to get out of the car. Well, he did have the right to tell her to get out of the car if he had a reason for her to get out of the car, which he could have easily articulated. Ma'am, I want you to get out of the car because I'm afraid that you have a weapon inside, or you're being belligerent. I'm afraid you might hurt me. But no, he doesn't do that. He says, instead, he pulls out his taser. And, you know, a taser is a weapon. And he clearly violated her constitutional rights when he pointed that taser at her and told her to get out of that car or I'm going to jerk you out of that car.
If I could interject.
Sure.
One thing here is don't get out of the car till you are told to get out of the car, though. Too many times people will jump out of the car and try to run back to the officer. Never do that, because that puts the officer in a bad situation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, many years ago, we were taught to get out of the car, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, I mean, plus it's just a traffic hazard, frankly. Yeah. So anyway, if he had said, well, you need to step out of the car because I need to search your car, then she should have gotten out of the car. So here's a situation where he was wrong and she was right. But did that make her safe?
No.
No. So then...
Being legal isn't always healthy, I guess.
That's true. And, you know, he may have thought he had probable cause to search her car. He may have thought he had probable cause to tell her to get out. But he needed to articulate it.
I want to make something clear, too. We are not picking on law enforcement. We are utilizing a situation that happened. You cannot deny it. And so we're studying it on both sides so that we can learn and be sure not to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm in favor of the law enforcement, and I understand their situation. But, again, here is someone who is trained that didn't de-escalate. He should have called for backup. That I think his training would have called for backup in that situation. So, anyways, it goes along. Miss Bland, she says, I refuse to talk to you other than to identify myself. Guess what? She's right about that. But unfortunately, the officer was further upset about that response. And again, his choice would have been to have called for backup and said, you know, let's try to get this de-escalated, get a couple officers in there where he's not in danger, where he doesn't have any real issues of him being in danger, and see what unfolds. So instead, he says, I'm giving you a lawful order. Now, you know, I know I'm nitpicking here, but was that a lawful order to put out a cigarette or get out of the car? In either case, it was not really a lawful order. He was mistaken about that. So what happened after that? He did then call for backup after he told her he was going to yank her out of there. So he really couldn't do that either unless she was posing a threat to his welfare or safety, which at that time I don't think the cigarette was posing a big problem for him. But he didn't see it that way. So she said, don't touch me. I'm not under arrest. To which he replied, well, you are under arrest. Well, for what? I don't know what she would have been under arrest for, because he did not articulate that. Instead, he turned to the radio. That's when he called for backup. And does he have an obligation to tell her why she's under arrest? Well, yes, he needs to do that. Now, I don't know about an obligation, but I think a reasonable obligation to put things at ease and overcome this conflict, he needs to tell her why she might be under arrest. We're not real sure why she would have been under arrest, except she didn't put out her cigarette and didn't dig it out of the car, which neither one of those were really legal for her to have to do. So she then asked, or asserts her right, I guess is a better way of putting it, to use her cell phone to record this conversation. Does she have that right? Well, yes, she does. But again, he perceives this as a threat to his authority. And by golly, he is the authority on the scene, according to himself, not according to the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And that's where I got a problem with the whole thing, because I'm a real believer in the Constitution.
Okay, we're going along here. Let me take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's June 17th. We're talking with Super Attorney Rick Dodd. We have Officer Randy Dixon here. We're talking about traffic stops, and we're talking about how it can go bad very quickly if personalities are bad or our ego states are out of whack. So this is a great learning process.
Yeah, it really tells us what not to do.
That's why we're doing it, is to tell us what not to do. So let's take a quick one-minute break, and when we come back, we'll continue it up. June 10th, 2017. If you want to call and put your two cents in, it's 697-6633. That's 254-697-6633. We're here again with Super Attorney Rick Dodd and Officer Randy Dixon. Hey, Rick, tell everybody, first of all, how they can get a hold of you real quick.
Oh, yeah. You can check us out on respectforyou.com. You can give us a call at 697-4965, or just drive down Houston Street and you'll see us on the right.
Very good. Okay, give us a quick recap of who we're talking about and what we're doing for those who are just tuning in.
We were just talking about the Sandra Bland case, which is a classic example of what not to do. And Chief Dixon here had just talked about what officers normally do, and this is an example of what an officer should have done but didn't do, and that is to de-escalate a problem that he perceives. Instead, he escalates it, because clearly Miss Bland was escalating it insofar as asserting her rights. And she had these rights, certainly, but Chief Dixon had made the point that this is not the place to hold court, that the place to hold court would have been later.
Yeah, what were you saying on that, Officer Dixon?
One of the things that I think, especially in this case here, I don't care whether you're a state trooper, whether you're a city policeman, whether you're a deputy sheriff, you know, it's incumbent upon whoever the supervisors are to know who their officers, and sometimes officers let their egos go unchecked. You know, just because we carry a badge on our chest, that doesn't make you the authoritarian to do things and what you want to do at will. You know, when I look for hire a policeman, I look for someone that had common sense, and I think that's what this boils down to. Stress is going to be there, but you have to know how to handle that stress. And I think, as Mr. Dodd said, that, you know, there's times you have to step back and you've got to think. Call somebody else. Call somebody to let you help mitigate, if you're feeling, if the officer feels angry, and I tell you something citizens can do too, and this, I highly urge this, if they feel out there on the street that it's getting out of hand, ask that officer to call, may I speak to your supervisor, would you have him come to the scene? But don't argue, don't get into it. You know, have somebody else come. It protects both of you. And the other thing is, most of the departments now are wearing body cams. And those body cams are not only for the protection of the officer, but they're for the protection of the citizen, too. It would take a foolish officer, very foolish officer, to lose his control when he's on camera. And I'm sorry, I just want to throw that in.
I'm going to make one comment. This is a great example of the ego states, parent, adult, child. And if we're not speaking adult to each other, we have potential conflict. Because if I'm acting parental to you, you'll probably act childlike back or vice versa. And that's just a beautiful recipe for conflict. So that's what we teach in our course as well. I don't know, Rick, if you're into that kind of stuff. Maybe we can do that for another show, talk about our ego states.
Sure.
De-escalation, nonviolent dispute resolution. But anyway, go on with what you're doing here.
Well, what happened after the stop and after some of the exchanges was the officer clearly was upset. And then he said, get out of the car or I will light you up. And he's talking about the taser that he had pointed at her. And again, this was a dangerous situation. I mean, if he had actually tased her in the face, she could have had brain damage, certainly could have had nerve damage to any of her facial muscles. This was a violent threat to her and clearly illegal and a violation of her Fourth Amendment rights. He had no business doing that. So many things went wrong here, and of course, ultimately, Miss Bland was put in jail, where 3 days later she apparently committed suicide. And so it was just horrible. Incredibly horrible situation.
From a basic traffic stop, it escalates to that. So that's why it is so important that we understand how things work on both sides of the badge. Okay? And just common sense. What else you got there, Rick, concerning that?
Well, you mentioned something. How do you respond if your rights are violated? Well, I would always ask, are we being recorded? And hopefully you are being recorded. And if your rights are being violated and you're being recorded, then you need to keep your mouth shut and let those violations occur, because if something does happen later down the road, then the jury or the judge actually is going to throw the case out because those violations. A lot of people think that they have to let the officer search their car. Well, there are some differences in the Fourth Amendment as far as a car and a home. For instance, the Supreme Court of the United States allows more latitude for police officers to search your car. You see, this goes along with whether you believe your rights were violated or not. Maybe they weren't being violated. You just might think they're being violated. So you need to be careful with what you think.
Well, I want to be open here. If an officer asks me, can I search your car, my answer is going to be, respectfully, sir, no.
I agree.
Now, if he tells me, get out of the car, I'm going to search your car, I'm going to say, yes, sir, because I'm not going to do it there. But
just be careful that you're not saying yes, sir, to search in the car, that you are, yes, sir, I'm getting out of the car.
Well, I'm going to make it very clear that I'm going to comply, because I'm not going to argue with the guy on the road. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to follow his orders. But I'm going to, since I know my rights and I know I got no junk in the car and everything I've got is legal, there is no reason for him to inspect it. So I'm going to say, respectfully, officer, no, I don't authorize a search. But then at that point, he demands me to get out, like this situation happened. I'm not going to escalate it. I'm going to follow the rules and I'll take care of it later.
Sure, absolutely. That is my point. You take care of it later. I mean, there are certain situations, because a car is movable, because a car is subject to certain restrictions, like you have to license it, you have to inspect it. The Supreme Court of the United States said a car has less constitutional rights with regard to search and seizure than a house does. For instance, if an officer believes, has probable cause, and probable cause can come through open sight, you know, if he sees contraband on the front seat or a vehicle. And, of course, sight is one of our senses, but so is smell. Mm-hmm. Probable cause can happen if they smell certain chemicals that officers are trained to smell that is commonly used to make certain drugs like methamphetamine, or the smell of marijuana that might give them probable cause to do a search. If a reasonable or informant. Gosh, what do they call them? Somebody who's...
Snitch?
A confidential informant.
Confidential, but the informant has to have some credibility.
Right.
A credible informant has given them information about something, then that might give them reasonable cause to stop a certain car and do a certain search. Whereas they would have to get a warrant to do that for a house. The rule is if they could have gotten a warrant, had they gone to the magistrate, then it would be a reasonable search for the car.
Also might throw in there, if a person is obviously sticking stuff underneath the seat or reaching under a seat, most officers are going to search that for their own safety.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, but that, in my opinion, that's reasonable because you're making these erratic movements. That's why as soon as the lights flash, the dome light's on, I want him to see me.
Well, that's reasonable to most people, but if you're in a situation in that car where you are doing that and you are becoming a little bit of conflict with an officer, they may not feel it's reasonable. My opinion, if somebody's sticking something under a seat or reaching down under a seat, for my own safety, so I can go home and see my kids, I'm going to search that car.
Okay, look, because we're limited on time, we got about 2-3 minutes max here, I want to ask one last question here. I had this asked me a lot. If you're a passenger in the vehicle and the officer comes up, obviously he's talking to the driver, but what if there's a license to carry in the vehicle? Does the license to carry in the vehicle have to declare? I know what the answer is, but I want you to say it. Or if there's something I'm missing here. So passenger in the car, traffic stop, do you have to announce that you're licensed to carry?
In my opinion, no.
That's my opinion, but I think it'd be a good idea to, because there is a gun in the car, and the officer should be
he's at risk. The person should do it, but are they mandated to do it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think they're not mandated to do it, but I know. Sometimes it's a good opinion. I just say, I guess you're going to have to call that shot on your own on that particular one. Okay, let's wrap this up. Guys, give me a final overview of what we've just done here. Any final comments before we close this up?
My only comment I have is just try to make sure that you do everything to keep the officer from becoming alarmed. If it's daytime, nighttime, it's going to be more on edge. You're going to have lights on your eyes, and there's reasons for that. Just don't do anything that's going to bring any undue attention to yourself on a traffic stop.
That's right. I was stopped one night out on the Long Bridge, and the stated reason was he couldn't see my front license plate. Well, it was dark. My lights were on. But instead of me, calling certain names for stopping me, I said, well, sir, why don't you go up with your flashlight and take a look at the front, please? He did, and sir then came around and apologized and left.
Very good, very good. Rick, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, please.
At respectforyou.com. If you look us up, you can read all about us. You can go to justice@respectforyou.com with an email. You can give us a call, 1-800-460-0606, or 1-888-MESO-FIRM, or just meet us on the street. Hey, we're around. Craig Brown in the office, he's involved in a lot of the local businesses as far as the community goes. And we do a lot of things around the community to help out and do what we can. So we're around.
All right, stand by for a second. Joel, what we're going to do is going to take a long break after this. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's June 10th, 2017. I still have a Super Attorney Rick Dodd to my left and Officer Randy Dixon to the right. The phone number here is 254-697-6633 if you've got a last-minute question. But right now, we're going to go over things that are coming up or have been done. And lots of things going on. Last night was our most recent round-robin competition. And, man, we had a lot of people. It was a lot of fun. And Butch Downey won the round-robin and got him a nice Mossberg Maverick 88 12-gauge pistol-grip pump shotgun. Say that 5 times fast. Joel, pick it up, see who it is. We got a call coming. Let's see if it's pertaining to the show and not selling something. Welcome to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Who we got on the line?
This is Steve Bassani.
Steve?
Yeah. Question for sorry I missed gentlemen. The show last night, the gun show. Anyways, my wife and I were driving real late back one night trying to make it home, and my wife was going like 5 miles over the speed limit through town, and she didn't even realize it. I think it was the last light going out of town, and she took off. She was going like 5 miles over the speed limit. Anyways, the officer stopped us, done everything exactly right. But what worried me was I'm sitting there with a pistol on my hip. And so I told the officer, I said, "Officer, I have a licensed pistol with me." And he didn't even answer me. He kept talking to Frances. She was driving. And I said, "Officer," he said, "I heard you, but I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the driver." So I immediately shut up.
I probably, my guess is that he didn't think you were any threat to him. You know, if he was talking to your wife about the infraction, the idea was that he didn't think you, or he didn't perceive you as any risk. If someone's willing to tell him that they have a license and that you're in the passenger seat, he probably did the right thing. Maybe he should have been a little more polite about it, but he also handled the situation in a way that wouldn't get you alarmed either.
Okay, I think we lost the call, but Steve, thank you for that call. That kind of fit what I was saying here, if you're a passenger in the seat, so that was a perfect follow-up. I appreciate the call. Anybody else? 254-697-6633. Today at 2 o'clock at Aaron's Gun Shop, we've got a license to carry class. Still seats available if you want to participate in that. It's $60 for a new one. If you've got a license already and you want a refresher, that's $40. And if you come in a group of five or more, it's half price, $30 a person. Remember, though, if you come in a group of five and only four show up, it's $60 a piece. Now, we have in-home gun familiarization classes, $60 for 90 minutes. I come to you. I know some people can't make it. I've got lots of people asking me, "Can you come to me?" And I just haven't been able to. Well, we've adjusted things. If you set it up with me, we'll get you squared away, do in-house for 90 minutes there based on both of our schedules, that whatever works best for us. Seminars. If you give me groups of five or more, I usually set up seminars at the first part of the year. We've done it already. If you've got a group of people who want to do rifle, pistol, shotgun type of seminars in groups of five, give me a call. We'll set that up. Ladies' night's coming up this Friday. Ladies get to shoot for free. Range time is free for the ladies. Sorry, guys, you're paying me. Now, I've got some exciting news. Starting July 1st, I will be having a second station, KRXT 98.5 FM, Saturdays starting at 8 o'clock. It'll only be a one-hour show for now, from 8 in the morning till 9. Then I'll race here to Cameron and do this show live from 10 to 12. So if there's any people out there who want to help keep the program on the air, your sponsorships are very welcome. Your contributions are very welcome. That's the only way we stay on the air. People like Rick and Twin Pistols and ANC Firearms and those people. So if you like this show, it doesn't stay on for free, okay? That's what's coming up. So much more. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out all the pages at aaronsgunshop.com. Please go to aaronsgunshop.com, Facebook page. Like us on Facebook. Give us positive feedback. Give us a call here. Show your support in any way you can. And what we're going to do to catch back up on the clock, Joel, we're going to take breaks all the way to 11, and then we're going to have on our very own voice of law enforcement.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Vitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. We missed a couple notes. I'm going to put Super Attorney Rick Dye back on. Rick, what you have here?
Yeah, you know, Capilano, Don, and Krebs, we do a lot of work with regarding products. One of the products we've been looking at recently has to do with weed killer Roundup. And there is some science out there that talks about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So if you or anybody you know have been unfortunate enough to be diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, please give us a call. We're there to help and make sure that you get the respect you deserve.
Fantastic. And once again, how do they get a hold of you? What's the website they can do it, the best one?
Respectforyou.com.
Okay, very good. All right, let's hear from Squirrel.
Are you needing repair service for your motorcycles, four-wheelers, ATVs, or farm utility vehicles? Then you need to visit Squirrel's Two Wheel Custom in Zobchickville. Squirrel's Two Wheel Customs is now located at 16162 Highway 53 in Zobchickville. At Squirrel's Two Wheel Customs, you'll find a wide assortment of parts and supplies. And if it's not in stock, David Trojan will take your order and your part or supply will be here in a very short time. Stop by Two Wheel Customs at 16162 Highway 53 in Zobchickville or call 985-2222. That's Squirrel's Two Wheel Customs, offering complete repair, service, parts, and supplies for any make or model of motorcycle, ATV, four-wheelers, and farm utility vehicles.
Now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good morning, everyone. I hope y'all are having a great Saturday morning. You look out and see the sun shining. It was nice and cool this morning, almost like a spring day. Unfortunately, today's supposed to be 90-something degrees. But there is some good luck and some good news on the horizon, folks. It is only 78 days. Count them. 78 days to the start of high school football season and college football season. So that's something to look forward to. Get through the doldrums of summer, and we'll get started with that. So I hope everybody has a great Saturday. Get out and do something today. Enjoy it. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy your family, because you do know what next week is. Next week is Father's Day. And I'm sure that every father here, the main thing we want to do is hear from our kids. So tell your dad hello if he's still alive. If he's not, pray for him and go out and see him. But tell your father hello if you see him. You know, I was wondering what to do this week, and I was thinking, you know, I'm going to do something that I haven't got to do in a long time, and it's called a vacation. You know, it's been many, many years, about eight now, since I've taken a vacation somewhere. Back then, I went to Colorado. Just talking last night to a real good friend of mine about going again maybe in September. Sharing some expenses and going up there, and I really look forward to that. But, you know, right now here in Central Texas, the kids are out of school. They're enjoying the break they have. The parents are now going crazy by now, wishing the kids were back in school, and plans are being made for that deserved time away from the working world of Central Texas and the surrounding area. Taking a vacation with your family not only provides those needed breaks, folks, but it also provides memories for you and your kids or family that will be remembered for a lifetime. I can still remember fondly, to this day, my days of going to the mountains of Colorado, getting up at the crack of dawn with my boys, seeing the first glimpse of sun on top of the mountain peaks called the Alpenglow, and watching the elk come out of the meadow. That's things that you never can take away from someone. That memory will always be there, but it's also good for your soul. You know, it keeps that idea. It keeps family fresh in our minds. It keeps us on our toes, basically. Things such as that keeps us of having our family and keeps us the thoughts of our family. However, and this is a big however, everyone, vacation time is also an important period of time to remember how to be safe and what to do to minimize any problems during your trips. On most extended stay vacations, it becomes necessary to stay overnight in a hotel or a motel. Your motel room becomes your home for the night and is your sanctuary while you're asleep. We know that. It's important to give you some thought about security planning, though, and that's really important when you're traveling. What hotel or motel are you going to select, and what room are you willing to accept? You know, and I know a lot of people don't think about that. A lot of people just think, I'll take whatever I can get. You know, the cost of the hotel room, of course, is important, but it's not always the best predictor of how safe the room will be. There are a few security rules of thumb that should apply to any hotel room you rent. Upper floors are safer from crime, but worse for fire rescue. So you got to figure, are you more safe in an upper hotel room from crime, or do you worry about burning? Emergency rescue is best below the fifth floor, to be honest with you. Most fire trucks in bigger cities, their ladders don't go over five or six stories. I always compromise by picking a modern fire-safe hotel and always request a room on an upper floor to reduce crime exposure. As I get older, those rooms are getting lower and lower on the ground. Ground floor rooms are more vulnerable to crime, but the access is much easier in and out of. And you have to think about that as you get up in age. Also, rooms not adjacent to fire stairs are safer from rooms that come from the inside. And you think, why is that? You have an easier room of escape, a reasonable area of escape when you're close to the fire escape areas. Criminals don't want to be trapped in the upper floors. They truly don't. And by design, high-rise buildings usually have fewer ground-level access points and are easier for the hotel staff to monitor who passes through. Hotel or motel rooms should be equipped with a solid core door or a metal door for your protection. Check on that. Make sure your hotels have good doors. Doors should be self-closing and self-locking. Room doors should have a deadbolt lock with at least a 1-inch throw that you can secure at nighttime when you're inside it. If the lock appears worn or there are pry marks around the lock, go somewhere else. That's kind of a given. I call it the knob lock should be a hotel style where you can push a button in the inside of the knob and block out all keys. That's not the kind you want. That's the kind that many people have access to. The safest now are the credit card type where you slip it in and you open. The electronic locks will lock out most room service keys when you set the deadbolt at night. So you're safe in two different directions that way. Number one, and this is really important, do not open your door to someone who knocks unannounced. Some crooks will pretend to be staff members of the hotel. Some will say they're for maintenance, but you need to always verify first. If you have somebody that comes to your door in the middle of the night, wants into your hotel room, your motel room, you need to call down to the front office and ask them if they have someone that was planned to come up. Don't open the door indiscriminately for anyone. You know, you just need to be sure that there's a lot of things that happen in motel parking lots. There's a lot of things that happen in hotels, motels, especially when you're in large areas that have a high tourist turnover, such as the coast or such as the mountain towns or maybe Las Vegas or some of that nature. Make sure also that all your windows and sliding doors are secured if they're accessible from the ground. There are some hotels, and you know, and I hate to use the word cheaper hotels, but it's the kind that most of us can afford to stay in when we go somewhere, the ones that we have to watch our budget for, like I do. A lot of them have sliding windows because sliding windows are conceivably much cheaper to install. Check to make sure they do lock, and if they don't lock, if there's not a way to lock the windows, ask to be moved to another room. I know this sounds kind of crazy, but I take with me pretty much everywhere I go some dowel rods. I have a little toolbox in the back of my truck, and I take dowel rods. And I'm not averse from putting a dowel rod behind a window or a door to make sure nobody pries their way in. Beware of balconies where someone can climb up and come through an open window or sliding door as well. If the windows or sliding doors are not accurate or not securable, once again, ask for another room. And this is real important, too. If your room has an adjoining door to an adjacent room, check in to see that it's secured with a deadbolt lock. You know, a lot of the older hotels, Motel 6, Best Western, they used to have it where people could get two or three rooms next to each other, and there was a common door in between, actually two common doors. Make sure that your side of your door has a deadbolt lock that you can lock someone out. Make sure it's working, and make sure that it is functional. After checking in, ask the attendant or desk clerk to escort you to your room if it's late at night. After unlocking the room, quickly inspect the closets under the bed and the bathroom, including behind the shower curtains before the bellman leaves or the employee leaves. Put your Do Not Disturb sign on the doorknob, even when you're away. This keeps people and burglars from coming in and looking around your room. Just perceive the idea that someone's in the room is really important. One of the things that I believe in, folks, and this is, I even do this at home many times, turn on your TV or radio just loud enough to hear through the door that gives the appearance that someone's in your room, even when you leave. This gives you a little avenue of security. This is very important to give the impression that individuals are still inside the room. Leave one light on inside the room if you want to return later after dark. You're not paying for the electricity. It doesn't make any difference. Leave all the lights on if you want to. This helps you see upon reentry and gives the room the appearance of occupancy from the outside. Also, make sure your curtains, especially if you have an outside entrance door to a breezeway, are closed completely. It's actually against state law for someone to be peeping into hotel, motel windows through the curtains, but people still do it. You can be walking down, especially if you go somewhere where there's a lot of outside entrances. I know then in the Galveston area, because of the sand and because of the wind, the surf, many of the hotels, motels have doors that actually face the Gulf Coast, and they're outside entrances. So you'll see people walking along all the time, putting towels over their breezeway racks. Things of that nature just brings attention. Keep your room secured. Keep the windows closed. Keep your drapes closed. There's a lot of peepers out there and wanting to get a cheap thrill. Don't let them have that cheap thrill. No one needs to see what you're doing inside your room. Absolutely no one. Always go through the same room inspection every time you enter and re-enter a room. This gives you a habit of making sure you're safe. And this applies just to the ladies of a group here. If you're traveling alone, ladies, you should use caution when using the breakfast order doorknob or the hangers. Don't let anybody know that you're by yourself. Have somebody have the appearance that you're with somebody and that you're safe. And when you find a suitable hotel that meets your safety standards and will cater to your security needs, try to stick with it and go to the same hotel in the same chain. Pretty much they have the same policies and ideas. Don't be afraid to complain to management to get the safe room you desire. You're paying for the room. Get what you want. Finally, and this is really important, know the area you're going to stay in. And let me tell you a quick story about something that happened 30 years ago. I had been sent by the Temple Police Department down to San Marcos to a week-long training at the State Crime Prevention Institute. Now, Tom Baudet and I were real good friends because he was cheap. Well, I had Motel 6 in San Marcos booked one night, actually for the whole week, and I'm laying there in bed about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I get a knock on the door. At 2:30 in the morning, a drunk tried to get into my room. Well, I opened up the door, and then this young drunk wanted to have company. Well, being a police officer, being in a room that far away at 2:30 in the morning, obviously, I wasn't going to open the door empty-handed, if you know what I mean. I had a gun with me. A young lady saw the gun, took off running. So I complained to management. The management says that they had a number of people that had been doing this over the last couple of months, including robberies where someone had gone into the people's rooms when they'd opened the door, and they'd actually strong-arm robbed them. Folks, 2:30 in the morning, if it's not a fireman, they don't need to be knocking on your door. Don't open the door for anyone that time of the morning. As I said earlier, cheap is not always the best way. Remember, we talk about talking about our car safety, making sure your car is serviced before you go on vacation. Make sure you carry maybe a spare gallon or two of water in your car, some antifreeze. Maybe you carry some jumper cables in your car. Things like this will make your pleasance and your vacations much more pleasant. And we take a lot of the stress away from being on vacation. It's only about 12, actually less than that, 12 weeks, 10, 11 weeks before school starts again. You're going to have to pack a lot of time in to have a good vacation. And sometimes the summers are the most dangerous times for our communities, especially when people go out of town. And we'll address that next week on what to do. But just to kind of recap a couple of things here for you folks. Number one, if you get a chance and if you don't mind going upstairs or riding an elevator, try to request a room on the upper floor, especially if it's an outside entrance. If it's inside entrances, it really doesn't make any difference. Know the locale where you're staying. Know the area that you're staying at. I have been in some cities before that I didn't know, and I got a hotel motel room, and you hear gunshots going off during the night. You hear sirens all night long. Pretty much an indicator that it's a part of the city I didn't need to be in. Make sure you look at the doors and make sure that the doors have good locking devices on them. That's your job. That's the motels, hotels, they're going to try to get away many times with the cheapest they can, especially in some of our resort areas. Make sure that the doors are secure for you. You know, once again, electronic card access locks are the safest, but they also have limitations. Make sure your door has a peephole and a night latch and a flap latch to make sure that it stays locked. Don't open the door for anybody. Look out first. Give a chance to see who's knocking on the door. If you don't see anybody, by all means, don't open the door. Never open the door. I don't care what it is. Never open the door finding out who it is first. If you decide to go somewhere, if you're going to go out for the day or go out for the night, turn your TV on, turn the radio on. Give it the appearance that somebody is in the room and that has the room occupied. Once again, turn your lights on in the room if you're going to go out. If you're going to be gone day or night, turn the light on, give the room an appearance of being lived in. And this is something that is really kind of, I think, extremely important. Watch your kids when they go outside the hotel pool or the vending machines. Many times we don't think about things happening on vacation. And luckily, not that much happens when kids and people are out on vacation. But there are instances in the past where the kids have disappeared or they've gotten into mischief or they've been lost. You know, big cities especially, watch where your kids are going. Supervise them. And, you know, also, and this is something that I think is really important, you're away from home. If you're 1,000 miles away from home, if you're 200 miles away from home, these people don't know you. When you use your credit cards or if you use your debit cards, many times what we do is we get the receipts, we wad it up and put it in a pocket or throw it away. Keep every single receipt when you're on vacation. You'd be surprised how many people come home from vacation and see that a $39 motel room is now $139 on their credit card. Don't give that chance of happening. Make sure that you keep up with what you're doing. Make sure you watch what you're doing. Vacations are a great time. They're a super time. But you also need to be conscientious of what you're doing and very, very conscientious of what your surroundings are. Another quick little story. I was taking my young kids and my wife down to Florida one summer and kind of got made a left turn when I should have taken a right turn or vice versa. I ended up in a part of Baton Rouge that was kind of a scary part of Baton Rouge. You know, when you pull up to the gas station and they've got bars over the gas pumps, much less bars over the windows of the convenience store, but your gas gauge says flashing E, you don't have much choice. Folks, be careful when you take vacations. Plan when you take vacations. We now have modern GPS that's going to help us out. Use your phone for GPS signals. And one of the things I will tell everybody is a cell phone is one of the safest, absolute safest things you can take on vacation. But they're not the savior of all. You're going to find some areas, especially out in the West, even here in West Texas, where your cell phone service is going to be limited. Know where you're going. Look at your coverage plan before you go. Have all that set before you make your trip so you'll have a pleasant trip. And we're not even talking about the need to fly and the safety of flying. We'll do that another time. But have a great vacation, folks. And if someone wants to talk about some vacations out to the West, I'm a pretty good planner on where to go to see things in the mountain states. So give me a holler sometime. I'll be able to help tell you some places that are photographers' paradises. So until next week, everybody, I hope everybody has had a great week. I've enjoyed the show today. Be safe, be careful, and keep your heads up and your feet on the ground. Take care.
Everybody, to the Aaron's High Calf Adventure Radio program. It's June 10th, 2017. We've got about 35 minutes left in the program. The number here to call me is 254-697-6633. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, July 1st, exciting news. We're going to be on the Rockdale Station, and we're going to be starting at 8 o'clock in the morning till 9. That's going to be July 1st. I'll be posting on Facebook, keeping you updated, telling you as we get closer and closer. Now, this segment is sponsored by ANC Firearms, and we're going to be talking about this week's product spotlight, the North American Arms Mini Revolver, the Pug, in 22 Magnum. ANC Firearms is located in Heidenhammer, in between Rogers and Temple. I'm sure you all know where it's at. The owner, Arch Kootens, is an awesome individual. Very nice guy. So is the crew down there. You got Clint, Mike, Dennis, they've got lots of guns, ammo, accessories, knives, reloading equipment, so on and so forth. The number there is 254-983-4417. Now, you need to support these sponsors. These sponsors are supporting me, and it's a big circle. So by supporting those sponsors, they support me, and we just keep going with the circle of life. Now, this North American Arms mini revolver is awesome. I love it. And I'll be honest with you. When I first saw it years ago, I thought, no way. There's just the accuracy on this thing is ridiculous. But the problem was I got such a large hand. The thing would swim in my hand. But then I saw a used one that had a different grip on it. I go, wait a minute, you know, that looks, it should work with this grip in my hand. And sure enough, that thing is extremely accurate, and I can't tell you how many I've sold from that point on. And what I've got and how I've customized mine, and they shoot fantastic. So we're going to be talking about the North American Arms Mini Revolver, the Pug. There's a large variety, and I'll tell you about those soon. But I'm going to read you an article by Dick Williams about the North American Arms Pug, and it pretty much tells you everything you need to know, but we'll go over some more details in a second. Let's see here. It goes, the national reaffirmation of our Second Amendment rights, has been fantastic over the last few years. The most visible evidence of this wonderful development has been the tidal wave of concealed carry weapon legislation in most of our states. Interestingly, many gun buyers and manufacturers have ignored years of advice from gun writers about the perils of leaving home with anything less than a 40 caliber pistol. It's understandable in that we gun writers have focused on in the season. Those weapons, bullets, are the proven way to end. The real world properly focused on the initial C in C. Your weapon must first be and foremost be concealed. And smaller guns are easier to conceal and carry, the other C, than larger guns. North American Arms revisited the page of American history where small single-shot derringers or mini revolvers ruled the concealed carry pocket pistol world of self-defense. This Utah-based company has made tiny revolvers for many years without their role in self-defense being fully appreciated. That's changed. Welcome the North American Arms Pug, a five-shot Derringer-sized revolver that has been equipped with a very serious set of self-defense sights designed for deployment in low to no-light situations with lightning speed. Measuring 4.5 inches long and 2.7 inches tall and 7/8 of an inch wide, this little powerhouse can be carried concealed by any size person. Made of 17-4PH stainless steel and equipped with a 1-inch heavy barrel, the Pug will probably outlive your grandkids, assuming you and I don't screw up and elect all the wrong people to political office. Yes, the Pug must be fired single action. And if you take my class, you know what that means. But it carries 5 rounds of 22 mag ammunition, the same number of rounds as your dad's J-frame. And the barrel is topped with a set of XS sight systems, tritium sights, which are as fast on target as any sights I've used. Additionally, the tritium insert in the large front sight dot makes it visible in minimal light condition that frequently accompany a hostile situation. While the 22 Magnum will not stop a charging buffalo, 5 alternating rounds of jacketed hollow points and solids should produce the desired effect on any adversary. A great self-defense feature of the pocket pistol is the ability to have your hand on the gun with it partially drawn from the holster, but still concealed in your pocket before trouble starts. Brandishing your weapon is not allowed, but preparedness while maintaining concealment is smart and provides a great advantage. At a recent event at Gunsight Academy, I found getting a partially drawn pocket pistol into action was much faster than deploying a holstered gun concealed under a vest or a jacket. As with every other skill acquired in life, practice is the key. One huge advantage of the North American Armed Pug is a gun firing 22 Magnum ammunition is such easier to master than one firing 38 Special and much less expensive to shoot. Buy an extra cylinder and 22 long rifle and cost decreased even more. If you go camping or take day trips into the outback, you'll acquire skill much faster simply because you'll reach for the pug whenever it's playtime. So how about that? CCW capabilities with a gun that's just fun to shoot. And a suggested retail price in the low 300s, I believe it's called a bargain. Now, this is the author's opinion on that, and I agree with most of it. I believe it's called a bargain. Now, this is the author's opinion on that, and I agree with most of it, 99% of it. But I'll tell you, I've got a lot of history and experience with the North American Arms Pug now. I've had one for years, been shooting it. And let's talk about it a little bit. When you buy the gun, the standard gun, they come with a little tiny rounded off grips that fit perfectly to the shape of the gun. However, sometimes those grips can be too small for a person with large hands like myself. But I've got the catalog for North American Arms, and it's very diverse in what they have here. First of all, before I get into the grips, let me just tell you, they've got different types of little mini revolvers. They've got one called the Sidewinder. And that one's basically like a revolver where you open up the cylinders, because normally to reload a North American Arms mini revolver, you have to pull the cylinder pin out, take the cylinder out, load it with 5 rounds, and put it all together. The Sidewinder, however, you open up the cylinder and it swings out to the right and it's all connected, so you're not going to miss any pieces. I want to make something very clear on this particular gun, though. This gun is not meant for a quick reload. This gun is meant to get you away from the threat, to get you to a bigger gun if you need to. Okay. Now, on this particular gun, I can't tell you how much I promote it to women. Women have things men don't have up on top, and it's a great place to hide one. And I make special holsters for that are perfect, and the ladies love it. You don't even know they've got it on. And I always tell them, look, if somebody's aggressing you and grabbing you or something, you comply, and your hand goes under your shirt, and out comes the little mini revolver, and there you go, and the person doesn't even know it. I call that the Buster for obvious reasons. Then, I'm not going to leave the guys out, I made one called the Chester. And the Chester works basically with a lanyard going around your neck with the holster attached to the end of it, and it's underneath your shirt, and the same concept idea. So it kind of hides in the valley of your chest. Now, guys, if you're bought and paid that real estate above your belt line there and it's sticking out a little bit, you know, you'll just have to wear a bigger shirt, I guess, to hide it. But it's a very, it's a very handy pistol or revolver. And you can put it in your boot, you can put it in your waistline, you can wear it in one of the holsters, like I said. But when it comes to the grip, what I noticed when I shot the mini revolver with the small grip with my large hand, I noticed that my shots were all over. Although they hit the paper, shooting at 11 by 17 piece of paper, I would hit the paper, it would just be all over the place. They have a grip called the boot grip. And what it does, it kind of looks like the old six-shooter, the John Wayne pistol, the grip on that. It's got the squared-off end on the backside, and that fits in the palm quite nicely, yet it keeps the skinniness of the gun intact. But it does make the shot group, when I shoot it, get into a 6-inch circle, which is very nice. On some of these guns, on one particular model, they have a gun called the Black Widow, and it has a large black rubber grip. That one makes it even more accurate, where I can get it inside of a 4 to 3 inch circle. But you start to lose concealability. We got a call for the show? Okay. Thank you for calling. Call back. We'll pick up. So you've got these different types of grips, depending on the size of your hand and how you want to carry it. They also have a grip that folds up like a lock blade knife, and it goes around part of the gun. So you can actually clip it into your pants pocket. It'll look like a folding knife that's you see on everybody's pants pocket. And I actually call this gun, the pocket knife of the gun world. You can basically go everywhere with this thing and not even know you got it on you. And there's a negative to that. It's so comfortable, sometimes you'll forget you got it on. You might walk into a spot where you're not supposed to. So keep in mind, you're wearing your mini revolver. Well made. Craftsmanship's well made. And this customer service at North American Arms is very good. It's excellent. If you get a 22 Magnum gun, excuse me, they come in two different frame sizes. They got the 22 long rifle frame, which is smaller, and they've got the 22 Magnum frame, which is larger. The nice thing about the 22 Magnum frame is that if you wanted to get an extra cylinder in 22 long rifle, you can purchase it. I think you have to send the gun to them so they can time the cylinder up. But you have the ability to swap out from 22 mag to 22 long rifle. Because the 22 Magnum is larger, obviously you can't fit that larger round in the smaller frame. So if you want to have the combination package, which they do sell, by the way, right from the get-go, you can get one that has got a 22 cylinder and a 22 mag cylinder. If you already have the gun and it's only 22 mag, you can call them up and you can order a 22 long rifle cylinder, send it to them, they'll time it up for you, and the price is right. They've also got, in the catalog here, they got different types of holsters, pocket holsters, hip holsters. They've even got the belt buckle. Now that, excuse me, now that open carry is here, the belt buckle is on your hip, and this little mini revolver can be locked into your belt buckle, and it's legal because it's on your hip, it's in a holster, and with open carry, you can walk around with that thing and no problems. Ankle holsters, hip holsters, pocket holsters, shoulder holsters, they've got gun display cases. So the North American Arms mini revolver Pug is the one I like the most just because how it looks. They've got long barrels and short barrels. So you can go to ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. The number is 254-983-4417. Ask them about the North American Arms mini revolver. They've got a variety of them. If they don't have it there, they can order it for you. It's not a problem. And what's nice about it is I think the most expensive one is probably high 300s, and that's with all the bells and whistles, and you can get it down to about $200 for just the plain Jane one. So anywhere in that price range, you're going to get an excellent gun for concealment. It's very effective in the round, and the ballistics of it look very good. So if you're interested in that, give ANC Firearms a call, 254-983-4417. Check it out. Have them put one on hold for you, and I think you're going to enjoy it very much. And if you've got any further questions, just feel free to give us a call. 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or go to the website aaronsgunshop.com and make sure you go to Facebook, like us on Facebook. Oh, also, too, become a subscriber to my YouTube channel. If you go to Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel, you can become a subscriber, look at all our interviews, our product demos, gun training videos. We even have videos there of the round robin competitions, shoot house, all sorts of things. So check it out, Aaron's Gun Shop on YouTube, and go to Facebook at aaronsgunshop.com and like us on Facebook. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go over a bunch of miscellaneous items, and maybe we'll get some phone calls from you. 254-697-6633.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and it's June 10th, 2017. We're finishing up the show here. We've got about another 20 minutes to go. And once again, if you want to be a part of the show, give us a call here at 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com. Now, we've got a great segue here because I just got done talking about the North American Arms mini revolver, the Pug, in 22 Magnum, which happens to be a rimfire cartridge. And the segue is this: dry firing. Dry firing is an excellent way to learn trigger control. Excellent way. However, dry firing rim-fired cartridges with the primers in the rim is not good at all. And I'm going to explain why. So if you ever see me in the shop and you're like dry firing a 22 or a 22 Magnum and I wince, you're going to learn why I wince. First of all, let's see if I can do this verbally with you understanding it. I'm assuming if you're listening to this program, you got a basic concept idea of a few different calibers or cartridges. The 38 Special, the 22 Long Rifle or 22 Magnum cartridge, and then a 9mm. Let me try to describe the 38 Special. I got it here in the video, in the camera right at the moment. You won't see this till later, but you got the basic cartridge. It has a few components. It has the bullet, the projectile, and the shell casing, and the primer. The primer is in the center of the bottom of the cartridge, and then there's gunpowder. So when the firing pin hits the primer that's in the center on the bottom of the cartridge, the primer sparks, it ignites the powder burns, builds up pressure, and the pressure pushes the projectile out of the weakest part of the gun, which is down at the muzzle of the barrel. But this cartridge has a rim on it, but the primer is not in the rim. The primer is in the center part of the bottom of the cartridge. Now, let's go to the next one. I'll come back to this in a second. I'm looking at a 22 long rifle cartridge. You know, if you put the two up and you look at them in a side profile, they look the same. Just one's bigger than the other. You've got the bullet, the shell casing, the rim. However, on the 22 long rifle, the primer is in the rim of the cartridge, not in the center on the bottom. So they're fired or ignited two different ways. And then we'll come back to that in a second. Let me talk about the last one now. I'm just looking at a standard 9mm cartridge. You've got the bullet, the projectile, the shell casing, the primer in the center of the bottom of the cartridge, but there's a difference. Whereas the 38 Special and the 22 Long Rifle or the 22 Magnum have rims, this one has like a reverse rim, an inverted rim, where the extractor catches into the little notch at the bottom of the cartridge. Okay? So those are the three different body styles or cartridges. So now let me tell you about dry firing. Let's go back to the 38. If I open up a 38 revolver and I put this cartridge in the cylinder and line up the cylinder so that when I pull the trigger, the hammer drops and then the firing pin hits, the firing pin is going to hit directly in the center of the bottom of the cartridge where the primer is. If I now take out that cartridge and do the same exact thing, the firing pin is going to hit absolutely nothing. The hammer is going to drop. The firing pin is going to go into the forward motion that it should to hit the primer, but the primer is not there. So the tip of the firing pin is hitting air. It's not hitting anything. Let's go to the 22 long rifle now. If I put this in a 22 revolver, we'll say, and then I line up that cylinder with the firing pin and I pull the trigger and the hammer drops. The hammer hits the firing pin. But on this one, the firing pin is designed to hit the edge of the rim because this does not have a primer in the bottom center. It has the primer on the edge of the rim, on the inside rim. So the firing pin has to be adjusted. If I was to take that cartridge out and dry fire the weapon, what's going to happen is the hammer's going to drop, it's going to hit the firing pin, and the part of the firing pin that hits the cartridge is now going to hit metal on metal. That's bad, because if you keep dry firing your 22 Magnum or 22 long rifle, the firing pin's going to continuously hit metal, and what's going to happen is you're going to start causing a dimple in the cylinder where the rim rests, or you could potentially start blunting your firing pin, damaging the firing pin, so that when you finally do load your 22 long rifle or 22 Magnum, and then the firing pin is supposed to hit the cartridge to make it go off, there's a soft spot. So what you want is you want to ensure the shape, the contour of the cylinder, so that it gives complete support to the rimmed cartridge that has the primer in the rim. If you're getting this, the 38 Special, it doesn't matter because the firing pin hits absolutely nothing. So dry firing a weapon, although it's fantastic for trigger control, it can be damaging to your gun if it's a 22 or a 22 Magnum because the firing pin is striking metal on metal. I got a video somewhere on my YouTube channel. If you go to Aaron Shop YouTube channel, I think I have yes, I do. I actually have a video, and there's a drawing of it that you can look at showing where the primers are on both different types of cartridges, and it'll give you a better understanding as to how it works. So if you got your 38 Special, make sure the ammo is in the other side of the house. No ammo around. The gun is empty. Check it five times and then check it again. And when you go to dry fire, feel free because the firing pin is hitting absolutely nothing. The 22, firing pin on metal, not good for the gun. So that's why I wince when I see people dry firing a 22. I did not know that until a very good friend of mine, gunsmith, said, don't do that, and here's why. So that's good news to know. All right. I got a couple of WTFs here I'm going to read real quick. And then I've got an opinion piece that I'm going to close up the show with. I saw this, and I'm just like, it makes my stomach turn. This is a registered sex offender faces a new charge. This is a WTF moment. This is Belton. A Temple registered sex offender was arrested Thursday for indecency with a child by sexual contact. James Paul Hicks, 51, was behind bars after his arrest in a courtroom at the Bell County Justice Center. Hicks previously was sentenced August 20th, 1999, to 6 years in prison for the aggravated sexual assault of a four-year-old girl, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety Sex Offender Registry. Check this out. The registry listed Hicks as a low-level risk offender who is required to register annually as a sex offender. Hello, low-level, four-year-old, sexual contact, say what? Let's go on. Then a child was about 3 years old when she told her mother's friend that Hicks inappropriately touched her while she and her child were visiting the Bell County home, the affidavit said. Later, during the investigation, a Texas State Technical College Police Department officer took a statement from Hicks in which he admitted he took off both his and the younger girl's clothes, touched her improper places, and obtained sexual gratification. You call that low level? I call that a piece of scum dirtbag that should not be around. But, you know, who am I? That's my personal opinion. Okay, that's WTF number one. This other one here. Rape stirs questions about seeing crimes online. I didn't highlight anything here, so let me just skim through it. The case of a 15-year-old Chicago girl who authorities say was raped while about 40 people watched on Facebook raises questions that have come up before in other attacks. What's the obligation of bystanders who see a crime unfolding? And why do they not intervene? A few weeks ago, I read to you a WTF moment about how a guy was laying in the street and people just walk right past him. Excuse me. None of those who watched the sexual assault involving the five or six men or boys called police. The girl knows at least one of her attackers, and investigators reported making good progress toward identifying the others. Okay, a closer look at what the laws in the United States say about people who witness crimes. The law in general. There is no all-encompassing legal obligation in the United States that a bystander who sees an act of violence must intervene or call police, but there are expectations to that idea, dubbed the no-duty rule. Many states have laws requiring intervention when the victim of an ongoing attack is a child. The relationship of the witness to the victim is also a factor in assessing criminal or civil liability. Bosses may have a duty to intervene on behalf of employees, teachers for students, and spouses for spouses. Other countries enshrine the principle that you must intervene into writing. The Charter of Human Rights and Freedoms in the Canadian province of Quebec says every person must come to the aid of anyone whose life is in peril, either personally or calling for aid, by giving him the necessary and immediate physical assistance unless it involves danger to himself or a third person or he has another valid reason. Let's see here. A long history. The legal and ethical questions surrounding when and under what conditions someone must help date back to ancient times. And I'm sure you all know this. The biblical parable of the Good Samaritan tells us of a man who is beaten and robbed, then left wounded by the roadside. A Levite and a priest walk by, offering no assistance. A Samaritan eventually stops to care for the man. Some state laws that spell out witness obligation and liabilities are called Good Samaritan laws. They are also sometimes referred to as duty to rescue laws and duty to report laws. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm trying to say is this. Don't just be a bystander. Get involved. Yeah, I know it's inconvenient, but my gosh, what do you think the person who's getting raped or beaten is feeling? Okay? And we're just going to walk on by? If there's something you can do, do it. Call 911. Say, hey, don't do that. Grab the person. Pull them off. If you're a licensed to carry person and it gets to that point, do what you feel that you got to do. Just make sure you know what you're doing. But that's a WTF moment to me all the time is when people see things bad and they just don't do anything. I think what Thomas Jefferson says, I'm killing this, basically bad can happen if good people stand up and do nothing. I kind of slaughtered that, but basically that's the idea. But if I see somebody raping a little girl, dude, I can tell you this, they won't be doing it for long. Okay, we're going to move on. I've got an opinion piece here that I wrote some time ago. Just never got to reading it, and I've got, I think, enough time to do it. So let me do it now. I want to read to you three snippets of news articles that I have read that tells what I've known for over 10 years based on my own studies, research, and listening to others who have done the same. I'm going to read those to you now, and then I'll continue with my own opinion piece. So let me start off with the first snippet of an article. The headline was WikiLeaks Reveals CIA Files. WikiLeaks published thousands of documents Tuesday described as secret files about CIA hacking tools the government employs to break into users' computers, mobile phones, and even TVs from companies like Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Samsung. The documents describe clandestine methods for bypassing or defeating encryption, antivirus tools, and other protective security features intended to keep the private information of citizens and corporations safe from prying eyes. The documents describe CIA efforts to subvert the world's most popular technology platforms, including Apple's iPhones, iPads, Google's Android phones, and the Microsoft Windows operating system for desktop computers and laptops. The documents also include discussions about compromising some internet-connected televisions to turn them into listening posts. One document discusses hacking vehicle systems, indicating the CIA's interest in hacking modern cars with sophisticated onboard computers. Okay, that's snippet number one. Snippet number two. This is Cal Thomas. Government spying on us should bother all parties. Most Americans suspect have the attitude the government is spying on someone, there is probably a good reason. In the latest document dumped by WikiLeaks, Julian Assange's outfit may cause some to rethink that premise. Certain malware allows CIA access to familiar U.S. and European commercial products, including the ones I stated before, which once enabled could pick up your living room chatter. Attorney John Whitehead, who heads the Rutherford Institute, which self-describes as a nonprofit conservative legal organization dedicated to the defense of civil, especially religious liberties and human rights, said he is not surprised at the extent of government spying. In a statement, Whitehead writes, government agencies such as the CIA and NSA have been spying on the citizenry through our smart TVs, listening in our phone calls, hacking into our computerized devices, including our cars, and compromising our security systems through the use of spyware and malware. And then finally, the last snippet. What you do on your cell phone could come back to haunt you. As far as Big Brother is concerned, nothing that you do on your cell phone is ever private. Not too long ago, it was being reported that the CIA has helped the Justice Department with technology that allows law enforcement office officials to scan data from thousands of U.S. cell phones at a time from the safety of a plane. The Central Intelligence Agency played a crucial role in helping the Justice Department develop technology that scans data from thousands of U.S. cell phones at a time, part of a secret high-tech alliance between the spy agency and domestic law enforcement, according to people familiar with the work. The CIA and the U.S. Marshals Service, an agency of the Justice Department, developed technology to locate specific cell phones in the U.S. through an airborne device that mimics a cell phone tower, these people said. So the next time a strange plane flies over your house, this may be what is happening. Now here is more on this disturbing new technology. The program operates specially equipped planes that fly from five U.S. cities with a flying range covering most of the U.S. population. Planes are equipped with these devices. Some past versions were dubbed dirt boxes by law enforcement officials that trick cell phones into reporting their unique registration information. Okay, I read you the snippets. Let me tell you what I think. I've been telling people this for years, and many have looked at me like I got two heads or that I'm wearing a foil hat or something. They think I'm paranoid or worried that the government is out to get me. Well, to all those people, I say, go suck an egg. I was right all along. Now, why does this information bother me? It's simple. It's a violation of my privacy. However, I'm not a fool. And I know that there is no way to stop it, and I only hope that the government truly does use it to catch only the bad guys. But another angle on this, or should I say, what else bothers me is that the majority of the U.S. population is oblivious to this or just doesn't care or are so naive that they think it can never happen. When someone of some intelligence and credibility gives me info that's out there, I've got to check it out to see if it's true or false based on my own findings. If it's true, I decide what to do with the information. If it's false, I throw it out. And then in the future, question the source from which I got the original information in the first place. So in short, let me say this. Instead of sitting on your thumb when you hear this kind of info, at least check it out. Don't just say, "Aw, you're nuts. The government doesn't do that." Because if you can think it, I'll bet the government already has a program for it. We must maintain an aware citizenry. It is vital to keep our free nation. Okay, I'm done. But for those of you who I told to suck on eggs, keep on sucking. Okay. All right. So. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you once again, go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out all that we have to offer at 2 o'clock today. I've got a license to carry class. If you want to tap into that, it's $60. And we'd love to have you there. We've also got our seminars. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. And if you've got groups of five or more for the license to carry class, it's half price. It's $60 for a new person, $40 for a refresher course. And we're starting on July 1st. We'll be coming out of the Rockdale Station, 98.5 FM. And we'll be doing a show starting at 8 o'clock in the morning until 9. And that'll be starting July 1st. So it'll be pretty much action-packed, just like this one is here, too. So, Joel, I think I got about a minute left. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to place it to fade out, and I'm going to say this to everybody. Thank you for your support. Please keep it, you know, give us like us on Facebook. Keep your powder dry, and God bless.
Believe in when they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, believe in when they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side.
CBS News, I'm Bill Raycock. TV's Batman has died.
Salt and corrosion. The infamous old enemies of the crime fighter.
Adam West had a successful film career, best known for the 1960s TV franchise that is still shown in reruns today. Film and TV historian Leonard Maltin says West's campy portrayal of the Caped Crusader was perfect.
He and his partner Burt Ward, who played Robin, just took to it like ducks to water. They got the tone, they got the idea, they had the humor. But they also took it seriously at the same time.
West had a hard time getting roles after Batman because of typecasting, but he later embraced that role in TV history, and he managed a few roles afterwards.